This is DJ Tanis of Trouble Radio. You are listening to a Trouble Radio podcast. This media is copywritten to protect all parties involved. Any attempt to copy for distribution or resale is strictly prohibited by law unless otherwise authorized in writing by Trouble Radio, Dave Ellefson, or Rat Pack Records. Enjoy the interview.
This is Kira Lee from Shadows Lie, and you're listening to TroubleRadioRocks.com.
Hey, people. You have Tanis
and Alana,
and we have Dave Ellefson. Okay, Ellefson or Ellefson?
Ellefson. There you go.
All right. Cool. Formerly of Megadeth, and now with F5. How you doing, buddy?
I'm doing good, man. Doing good.
Excellent. Hey, you know it's funny. Real quick to start this off with. We have a DJ, I guess, who you had talked to before as a friend of the show, Malice Cooper, and of which she sends a shout out. And of course, she wants me to record whatever you say. Who the hell's that?
It's a good name, by the way.
It is, isn't it, though? But it's funny. She goes, hey, you mean he called to tell you he was going to be behind? I said, absolutely. He's professional that way.
That's just kind of a natural courtesy, I think, for, well, at least everybody should do that, you know, call to let you know if you're running late. 15 minutes is fashion, my way. Past that, you're just flat out late, you know?
There you go.
It depends on if you're in Paris or not, though.
So, bro, what do you got? So you got a tour coming up. Let's just get right into the meat of the meat and potatoes, and then we'll get off to other things. But you got a tour coming up. How's that looking so far?
Yeah, it's good. You know, we just did a show, an F5 show in Nashville a couple weeks ago, and now I'm switching gears over to my other band that I have called Hail with Andreas Kisser from Sepultura, Tim Ripper Owens, and Roy Mayorga from Stone Sour is going to join us on drums on this tour. It's about a two-week tour throughout Scandinavia, throughout all of Northern Europe, starting basically the first 2 weeks of September is what it is. So yeah, we're looking forward to it. It's a good fun time out. We invite a lot of our friends to come up and jam with us. So we've got some special guests lined up from some other well-known bands who live up there in that part of the world, and they're going to come up and throw down and have some fun with the fans and play some really loud heavy metal for a couple weeks.
Awesome. I have a question for you.
Yeah.
With the global economy so bad right now, have you had to alter any of your touring schedule because of it?
You know, most of the touring that I've been doing here has been, you know, a couple weeks here, a week there, a couple weeks over here, that type of stuff. So that hasn't been as bad. You know, I know a couple years ago when fuel prices were really high, that was probably as much of a hindrance to most touring artists just because the cost got so high. Of course, this day and age when, you know, now everybody's really having to buckle down, people don't have as much what they call discretionary income and, you know, extra money laying around that can just go blow it on going to rock concerts and stuff. But I think, you know, to some degree, people always need to be entertained, you know, and I think in good times as well as bad, the good news is people are always looking for entertainment. And the things I do, I try to always have them be very fair price tickets. The merchandise that's available, have that not be so exorbitantly priced. And I try to do a lot of these things kind of indie style, then that way it takes out all the middlemen that end up having to, you know, add all their fees and charges in on it. So, you know, do it in a way that that everybody gets some entertainment out of it, and everybody is okay with it financially, and so everybody walks away with it, hopefully at the end of the night, feeling good about the whole experience.
That's that, and hearing a lot of good music too, because you're definitely targeting the right people now. Very good.
Yeah, I mean, wow, you know, I think metal fans, you know, we you know, I think with any style of music, you've got your hardcore dedicated fans, but with metal music, you know, it's about a life and it's a movement, and I think that as long as you stay true to that, and you remember where you came from and you keep those roots pure, then you know, even as you might transition into new things and do other things, you'll at least always be in touch with your audience, you know, and especially like something like Hail that we do. That's the whole point of it, is that it's really like this heavy metal party night out, and it's meant to be just that. It's meant to be fun, you know. No one's out promoting solo careers or their own bands or any of that kind of stuff. It's really kind of a big union of several different bands across a couple different generations of metal.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, it's amazing. It's nice to hear that, you know, you're bringing things down because a lot of the various people that would be coming, everybody's kind of strapped. But you know, I mean, you take that as opposed to, say, for example, like a sporting event. You know, I'm a huge sports fan, and they're not bringing their ticket prices down. They're looking to charge and trying to make that smack, and you know, that's a huge deterrent. And that, you know, you and your, you know, compatriots are willing to do that. That's huge.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. I mean, you're right. I mean, there's a lot of, you know, music. When I was growing up, man, it was like, you know, there's, of course, there was sports, but people in sports weren't making as much money. And so it was almost like you were into sports or you were into music. It was almost one or the other. These days, sports, video games, music, television, going out to see movies and theaters, they're kind of all cross-collateralized across each other, you know, and so by doing that, they kind of become competition for each other. And I would agree. I mean, ticket prices for sporting events, it can be, you know, where I live in the Phoenix area, are probably some of the most reasonably priced, but certainly as you get to the coast or you get to like teams in the Midwest that are real highly because of a Cubs game or something, you know, tickets get right. Very, very expensive. And it's a lot, man. It's more than a lot of people, again, especially when times are tough and people got to, you know, buckle down, man. It just gets to be more and more. And, you know, and it feeds itself, doesn't it? Because all of a sudden the players want more because they know that the owners are making more, and then so all of a sudden you get to this point where you hit these really high salary caps if they have them, and then all of a sudden times are tough like they are now, and to try to back that down to say, look, we're not making as much money, the players have to take a cut, or they have to cut the players off the roster and redesign a team, which is quite honestly is what's happening with the Phoenix Suns with our basketball team. We basically got rid of everybody now, you know. No Shaq, you know, it's like everybody's gone. But that's kind of what happens. I mean, at some point, it's like, man, you know, it's we got to put butts in the seats. And, you know, you think of it as a business, of course, you have to if you're in the entertainment industry. And to some degree, man, if you go to a professional sporting event, and use basketball as a perfect example. I mean, you realize when you're in the arena watching basketball, the whole thing is designed for television. You know, like in between, right. like the commercial breaks, you know, they've got the mascot or some gymnastics or, you know, they're throwing T-shirts out or whatever. They're basically trying to keep people occupied during the commercial break. And it's like a Barnum and Bailey circus thing. And you realize the whole thing is designed for television. I mean, that's really what most sports is. It's really just another form of a rock concert, really.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. You definitely.
That makes complete sense to me. I have another question for you. You know, we have teenagers here. My teenager, since he was two, has known what he wanted to do for a living. Was that something, I mean, was music all-inspiring and all-encompassing when you were young, very, very young, or did you have aspirations of being in medicine or something like that?
I had no aspirations to do anything but what I do right now. And it's funny because, at a young age, at 11, 10, 11 years old, I discovered rock and roll, heard it on the, you know, I grew up in the Midwest in a little on a farm, you know, in southern Minnesota.
Oh, wow.
And so I'd have to ride the school bus, and my school bus drivers would have on like WLS AM radio out of Chicago. So I'd hear Styx and Queen and, Sweet and, you know, pretty heavy rock things for that time. And I was just like, wow, this is great. And that's kind of my first exposure to it. And then I started getting into like Bachman Turner Overdrive and Kiss and then Nugent and Aerosmith and all these things that were, you know, really popular when I was a kid. And man, I wanted to play the bass for whatever reason, not guitar. And so I got really into that. And I mean, so by age 11, I was playing. By age 12, I had bands and By age 13, wow. I was out gigging at keg parties and dances and wherever else my bands could play.
That's amazing. So you definitely were born to do what you're doing right now. That's what it sounds like.
It appears that way.
No, trust me, you were born to do what you're doing right now.
Yeah, and it's interesting because I have not, I just haven't had any other interests. You know, everything I do is around music, the music business, just everything about it. And it's, I started up this last year, up on YouTube, a little channel called Bud Ellison's Rock Shop. And the whole point of what I talk about on there is partly to the fans, but also to people that are in the music business or, aspiring to get in the music business, because I know what it's like trying to get into it and be in it, and it changes all the time. And so I give these little, kind of 5 to 10 minute little webisodes on various topics about the business and music and different playing things and auditioning and all kinds of different little topics like that. So, just as a way to help, kind of lay a few crumbs out there for people to, get on the path and hopefully try to get in the game themselves.
Oh, that's cool you're doing that, guy. Because I can remember, when I first got started out playing, and I started out as a drummer and then moved on after I got sick of bands and listening to people yell at me about tuning their acts. I couldn't hit the skins. I went solo, and when I sat down and tried to figure out how a mixer worked, oh my God,
right?
Right. I mean that. I mean, and we didn't have, back in those days, I mean, you figure this is the 80s and 90s, we didn't have the YouTube. We didn't have all these other avenues that yourself and others, get out there and put out those nuggets of information and wisdom, which would have been so helpful and saved many hundreds of hours.
Well, yeah, that's kind of, years ago in 1996, I authored a book called Making Music Your Business, and that was the whole point of it. I was like, if Gene Simmons or Geddy Lee or somebody that, Angus Young, guys I grew up listening to, if they'd written a book about the music business, man, I would have bought it in a heartbeat just to get some, get a little bit of experience and wisdom from those guys. And so I thought, let me do that. And this YouTube, this Rock Shop thing is kind of just an extension of that. And I thought, at some point I'll probably author another book and go into some more detail of it. But I thought, information changes so quickly these days that I thought this YouTube thing is a simple of a way to do it for right now, to just kind of, and it's something I'm helping formulate some ideas for the next book that at some point I'll probably author that and put that out and just as a way to, I think there's a lot of cool online mediums. There's another one that looks like I'm going to get involved with here shortly, and they'll probably be doing a press release on it, but it's just a way to teach and to even do some kind of music business consulting and some things like that, some online things that I can do one-on-one with people that that may want to get with me in a one-on-one type of setting with that. So there's new ways of doing it, and it's quick and it's instantaneous and hopefully beneficial for everybody.
Absolutely, absolutely. Well, let's take a step back here and get more, get a little more loose. I'm sure you get the standard questions, who your influences about. We kind of got a little bit of sense of that, but all right. So you're going to sit down this evening. Now, so you're in Arizona, so you're on our time. You're on the West Coast time. What's on the plate for dinner, man?
He's hungry.
I'm hungry. What's on the plate for dinner?
It's on the plate for dinner. I don't know. Actually, I think my wife's going to go get some chicken, and she's going to do the marinating, and I'll do the grilling. I'm kind of a grill master kind of guy. So, it's cool. My daughter's learning how to. Fortunately, my wife's a good cook. So she's a New Jersey Italian. So she learned how to cook, which is something that's kind of interesting, because my mom knew how to cook growing up, and it's funny because a lot of women that are about my age, a lot of them don't know how to cook. It's bizarre. I'm like, even I know how to cook, So
I'm holding my head down low. You're speaking to me.
Well, it's cool, obviously eating is, you got to do it to sustain yourself. But my family, we're into, we spend a lot of time in the kitchen cooking and creating, and it's you know, again, that's kind of another form of creativity. That's why, you know, I watch the Food Network. My whole family does a lot. And it's, in fact, I remember years ago being in the studio recording the World Needs a Hero album, and Al Petrelli was playing guitar on that record. And he being, you know, a nice New York Italian, he had the Food Network on, and we're watching Emeril while we're doing overdubs. And, I'd go, God, I'm getting hungry again. It's like I just ate, and I'm already hungry, you know. And I realize it's like I'm being subliminally fed food all day long from Al watching the Food Network.
Well, for all the women that can't cook, let me apologize for them, because I happen to be in that category. I can cook certain things, and I am one of those women that have worked most of her life. So I'm sorry, Dave.
Well, yeah, and here's kind of the interesting point of that is that, you know, you're right. It's like tables have turned a little bit. You know, I think probably us growing up, the father worked, the mother stayed home, and that was kind of the way it was. But in our generation, mothers have, you know, the women have worked, and so now the good news is the fathers cook, you know, or the husbands cook. So it's you know, I guess that's probably the upside to it, is it isn't the typical the mom stays at home, the husband goes to work, like we saw and Leave It to Beaver or Father Knows Best growing up. So I guess that's probably one of the good things of it, is like men have learned how to get in the kitchen, and you know, again, you look at the Food Network, half these guys are men chefs, you know. Everything's not Rachel Ray.
Yeah. Well, you know, I learned at the age of 25 that macaroni and cheese and Campbell's soup only go so far.
Yeah, and that's a great staple of the starving musician diet, you know what I mean? Top ramen, right? I remember you go to the Ralph's on Sunset in Hollywood, you know, and when you're a starving musician, you can buy, like, I don't know, 5 or 10 packs of Top Ramen for $1, you know, and then you can use your other dollar to buy a pack of cigarettes because you're, you know, 18 and you don't think you're going to get cancer and die yet, so.
Isn't that the truth?
Okay, here's a debate that's been going on in my house a little while. Pedicures. What's wrong with you guys getting pedicures? I mean, have you ever had a pedicure before, Dave? Dave, have you ever had one?
Actually, I have. I have had one, yes. Uh-huh. Yeah. Well,
most guys...
Here's what it is. I think if you're, you know, if you're wild and woolly, you know, and... you know, then you don't, and you know, I mean, it's you know, at some point, yeah, you know, I have had them, you know, I've even had manicures. In fact, you know, now I kind of do most of it myself, but I've had them a couple of times in my life. And the truth of it is if your fingers are used in close-up television and things like that, it's like, you know, I don't know. For me, I kind of like to look the best I can. You know, I'm not like a prissy prima donna by any means, you know,
put your best foot forward.
Yeah, exactly. Cool. I mean, you know, to some degree, if you're on TV and my thought is you should look the best you possibly can. Why would you not take advantage of what's at your disposal? Now, with that said, I don't slather black fingernail polish on my hands either. So maybe is the opposite. If you didn't want to get the manicure or the pedicure, you just throw some black fingernail polish on, and you're probably good to go too.
No, I got you. Yeah, the black fingernail polishes. Yeah, I'm not down with that either.
Well, you know, when I first met my guy, I said, hey, pedicures, you know, instead of the long talons, right? And he's like, men don't get pedicures. I go, yes, they do. And I thank you so much for supporting that, because I think, plus it feels good, doesn't it? All that massaging
I'm loving it.
Sleeping in the massage chairs. I mean, it's the best.
Well, here's the thing, you know, if you're spending a lot of time on the road and you're getting, you know, you're getting beat up pretty regularly from thrashing and rocking and all that, it's like, you know, if you can, whatever you can do to kind of ease the pain and, you know, live maybe a little better, it's like, why wouldn't you take advantage of that, you know? So,
that's right.
You know, it's, you know, that's just one of the things you do. It's like, I mean, professional football players, they get massages, I'm here to tell you. You know what I mean? It's like, you know, they probably go see a chiropractor once in a while, too. So, you know, it's...
I actually have that on firsthand authority, having been an ex-professional football player. The massages were daily and the chiropractors were every other day.
Exactly. So, John, some people want to be the tough guy. That's cool. But, you know, it's at the same time, it's like, you know, nothing wrong with kind of... loosen. Hey, even Kobe beef, you know, the cow gets fed beer and gets massaged before they kill it and we eat it, you know.
You got that
That's
right.
That's true.
That's too cool. So, okay, so now, you got the tour. It's going to be coming away. What are your what's going on for the holidays with you? Are you going to be working? Or are you going to be taking some time off and spending with the fam?
You know, I try to leave the holidays open. You know, my daughter has a October birthday, so Halloween is still, she's 10, so that's a big day for her. So I like being able to go out and, you know, watch the, you know, trick-or-treating and being part of that. There's all the stuff going on around that time of the year, so I try to, you know, take the work that comes to me that works, you know, but then when I can squeeze in holiday time, I usually try to do that. My Thanksgiving, you know, is another big one, and of course, you know, the Christmas holiday season, that's my favorite time. And living in the out west, you know, my family years ago, we decided we're not going to travel back east and go to the snow, because that's why we live in the desert. That's one of the nicest times. One of the nicest times of the year, so we kind of have the family come to us rather than us go to them. So but yeah, those are you know, no big plans on the books, but those are usually times we just kind of try to hunker down and keep it, you know, kind of live a simple life around the holidays, so we can just hang and have Santa come by and hopefully have a good holiday season, you know.
I feel you. Now I got a question for you. Okay, so that big honking bowl of yum yums is sitting beside the door. What are you snaking, a Snickers or a Reese's cup?
All the above. All the above. Yeah. That's one where the rock star diet goes out the door for a night, you know, and you indulge a little, you know.
I'm snitching on him. I mean, he takes all the chocolate and hoards it for last and hopes that we run out of kids so that he gets to keep it.
Yeah, out goes the sweet tarts and the sweet tarts, the dum-dums and the candy corn. That goes first, you know. If they decide to peter out, then...
Stuff you would never eat the other 364 days of the year suddenly are, like, really good on Halloween for some reason. I don't know why that is.
That right.
Because chocolate is an aphrodisiac, and we all know that. We need it from time to time.
Comfort food.
And we men do know that, so that's why we, that's that one night of the year where it's an exception.
Oh, cool. So what do you do for fun? Do you like snowmobile, since you don't like snow, or what, ride horses or something like that?
You know what? It's funny. I was talking to somebody the other day, and as much as we complain about it being 110, 115 in the desert, you know what? A Phoenix summer is still better than a Midwest winter to me, you know?
Oh, you know it. You know it.
Yeah. You know what I mean? So it's like, for me, I try to get out of the heat a little bit in the summer, and I've been taking my kids out to, not actually golfing, but kind of, you know, swinging the clubs. We do a lot of softball, tennis, swimming, and just try to be outdoor hiking, you know, mountain biking and street biking and stuff like that. So it's, you know, for fun, to be honest with you, most of my time is spent with my family and my kids, because when I'm on the clock and I'm working and playing, you know, if you call playing work, and I think that's why they call it playing, so you don't have to work.
You got it.
But, you know.
Yeah. Well, that's nice to, hey.
We have to try to justify what we do as work, so we call it work. But so anyway, when I'm actually gigging and touring and recording and stuff like that, you know, that time is usually does not include my family. So I'm kind of, you know, in my own little world, but it's usually me and the guys. And so while we're out doing that, you know, I'm kind of, that's time when I'm away from my family. So when I'm home and I'm off the road or I'm not in the studio, I usually try to really take that time and give it to the family and give it to them so that we can hang. And you know, for me, having kids, as much as, you know, you have to be a role model and a parent, it's also a time that it keeps me young and keeps me youthful. And I think for me, a lot of it kind of reminds me, that's right, it's good to be a kid, you know, and so it's being a parent's been a good thing for me.
Very good. Cool. So are you planning enough to get yourself a handicap?
You know, I realized years ago when I moved to Arizona from California, in order to live in Arizona, you got to have golf clubs and a gun, you know, in order to let have much.
So you poor sport, huh?
Yeah, I had both, you know. I was the cowboy or the golfer, but, you know, I golfed a little bit, and it's like I realized, you know, I'm a pretty soggy golfer. This is going to cost me a lot of time and a lot of money to get good, so I got to golfing like I do bowling. You know, I do it a couple times a year. Usually my first round of bowling is kind of getting warmed up. My second round is pretty good, and then by the round three, I suck again. So, you know.
And that's where the gun comes in. You shoot the ball.
Yeah, no. It's funny. Growing up on a farm, you know, I was, you know, you can do a lot. You know, and so you can shoot a bow and arrow, you can shoot a gun, you can do things, and people don't die because you're out in the kind of in the middle of nowhere. And so, you know, I became a pretty good aim, and I kind of had an affinity for guns growing up. And so, I mean, I'm not like Ted Nugent, you know, I'm not into it like he is, you know, as sort of a survivalist.
Yeah.
But, you know, I'm kind of into him, you know, and my son's kind of getting into him. So there's a respect for the firearm, you know, and all that. But, so that's more on that level. And again, you know, the golf thing is kind of, now, to be honest with you, I'm glad my kids are getting into it because I'm a pretty sucky golfer. So maybe one of them can actually be good at it.
I feel, hey, you're ever in the San Francisco Bay Area, give me a call. I'll take you someplace in the middle of nowhere we can suck together and nobody will see.
He's serious.
Oh, goodness.
I play better on the best ball kind of thing because someone else can hit it better than me and I can kind of like piggyback off their shot, you know.
There you go. Hey, I got something to throw by you, and I've thrown it by a couple other people. Now, I'm sure you're familiar with this phenomenon that is American Idol.
Yeah, I try to pay as little attention to it as possible. Yeah. So anyway, go ahead.
But see, now check this out. Okay, I have like an idea. See, they've been bringing back these bands from the '90s and from the '80s, and they've been the people have been singing and playing their music and whatnot. What do you think? I mean, I could see you as a judge. You know, you know, you sit there, you critique them a tad, and all these guys play instruments nowadays. What do you think? You have the Dave Ellison special, and you sit there and critique them all, and they can just play some jams. What do you think?
Yeah.
You know, I have to do this celebrity judging from time to time, and I do, you know, just for time to time. Again, but it's kind of more like my rock shop, where it's sort of I get my own, you know, experience to the thing. You know, here's the deal. With American Idol, you know, to me, it's just kind of the Walmart society we live in, you know what I mean, you know, the thing with American Idol isn't so much that I blame the creators and the people that do it, because let's face it, you know, they have something that's worked, you know, but my problem with it is the fact that everybody watches it. That's like, to me, it's not the manufacturer, it's the customer that I'm questioned more than anything, you know. I'm like, you're kidding? I mean, like, Kelly Clarkson and Carrie Underwood were phenomenal. I mean, that is great talent, you know what I mean? And I think what's kind of cool is that Chris Daughtry, who did not win, right, by like kind of a long shot, by like the top three, but still from 3-1 is a pretty big difference, you know. And the fact that he's had a truly artistically successful career, I think is cool, you know, that, you know what I mean? Because he did not win, and he's as successful almost as probably any of the winners were. And I think that's cool because he just goes to show that you don't need American Idol to be successful. And I think that's what's sucky, and that's kind of why I make the Walmart references. It's sort of like, you know, it's almost like you have to be part of the big corporate chain in order to be successful. And I think I hate that, and it sucks. And it's made it even harder for real talent to rise above. And it's almost like, man, is that what it's come to? Is we have to have like this reality judge show in order to actually, you know, in order to get in the game? And by the same token, what American Idol does show, and this is probably the upside to it, and this is probably where Simon Cowell, as much as he's, a lot of people hate him, is, you know, he calls it like it is, you know, and a lot of people think they want, and a lot of people think it's kind of that, well, if it were easy, everybody would be doing it, and he just goes to show that it isn't easy, and everybody can do it, and everybody's not going to get to do it, and you know, let's cut through the, you know, as much as the internet has made, you know, a little bit of fame accessible to almost everybody, in order to really be great and the real true talent, man, it's like the old, like what we're seeing with Michael Jackson and the old Motown and Smokey Robinson and all that stuff. I mean, you look back on that stuff, man. I mean, those people that really got the chance to make records and be on TV and do all that stuff, man, you realize how really, truly talented they were. And the people that discovered them were just as talented. They really had an ear and an eye for real, true, raw talent. And that's a side of the entertainment business that I do really admire, and I have great respect for that because, you know, I think as we've seen in our lifetime, you get one Guns N' Roses, and all of a sudden there's, you know, next thing you know, the record industry is looking for their, you know, for the next one. And the truth of it is usually the first one to the table is the best one.
Mm-hmm. I agree. And the one slam that I have to do on American Idol is Jennifer Hudson. I mean, she walked away with an Academy Award and all that stuff. Simon was so wrong there. I mean, yeah. She was like 11th.
Well, here's the thing about it that I don't like is that, you know, is the fate... Well, not forget about the fate of the artist, because whatever with that to some degree, but it's sort of like... The fact that, you know, the public is, it can be such lemmings off the cliff, you know what I mean? That they're just going to follow what the panel of two or three judges, you know, deems, we deem you worthy, wave the wand, they win the pageant, and all of a sudden, you know, now all of a sudden America just follows that off the cliff. And I'm just kind of like, you know, I think to some degree, The real true talent comes out, and again, I you know, the first Kelly Clarkson records and Carrie Underwood. I mean, you know, these people, they do legitimately have real talent. You know what I mean? And mm-hmm. But a lot of it, I think what it goes to show is that when you're building a career like that, it's like you've got the talent, then you've got the songwriters, and you've got the producer. I mean, the thing about it is the whole cookie cutter homogenization, because it's like you win. It's funny, you know, you can win American Idol in August, and suddenly by October you've got a hit record out. It's like that's the machine of the music business doing that. That's not,
wow, yeah.
You know what I mean? That's. I guess I came from a different school. You know, I came from, you know, you're in there with your buddies and you're duking it out and you're writing tunes and you're going on tour, and the way I did it was different than that, and I hope that the way I did it doesn't just go away because all of a sudden the whole world needs some reality TV show of American Idol.
Right, right. Well, I think that the way that you did it is not going to go away. In fact, I actually think that that is going to be more the norm, especially as you see all these bands who you know, they'll put their face out there on the internet, but they also, at least the successful ones or the ones that could be successful, realize that, you know, their face on the internet is all well and good, but they're still going to have to get out there, hop in the white nasty van, and, you know, cruise whatever region they happen to be in. And if they're lucky, extend that maybe a couple of states or whatnot, but I think that and they're getting away from the music, the high powered portion of the music industry. They're trying to get out there on their own and actually do the kind of, you know, pull an a la Fish.
It's like a grassroots kind of a campaign a lot of these indie bands are trying to do. Yeah, you're right.
Yeah, and
what do you think about that?
What's that?
No, I said, what do you think about that? I mean, the grassroots, the way they're just going door to door, like Kirk says.
Yeah, it's like campaigning for the presidency or something. Door to door campaigning. I mean, look, you know, again, you know, why one artist gets sort of cherry picked to be successful over another? I don't know. I mean, I think we've built something from the grassroots up. When something is truly great, more than one person says it's great. You know, my dad always used to tell me that. He goes, you may be good, but you're not great until someone else thinks you are. And he used to hammer that through to me over and over and over again. And his point was, you know, don't sit down in your basement or in your garage. You know, you can be good and know you're good for sure. You know, greatness really comes when all of a sudden the masses and the public go, yeah, this is the deal. You know what I mean? And I think about the early Bay Area days of thrash metal that I grew up in, you know, where, you know, with Dave Holling, with Metallica, and seeing that trickle down to us and Slayer and Dark Angel and out east, Anthrax, and, you know, and just watching what, you know, what developed here in America with the early origins of thrash metal. And it was a scene, it was a movement, and it wasn't, you know, one band, certainly Metallica was spearheading it, but even before them was Venom and Motorhead. It's probably Motorhead especially because they were more popular, but, you know, these bands that really duked it out, man, and it was a lot of hard work, man. It wasn't, it didn't, nothing came overnight and nothing came easy to any of us. And even sustaining it is not easy. It's not, you know, you got to show up and be willing to go to work every day. You know, it's not, it's, and I talk about that in my book and even on my rock shop thing is, you know, don't think that you can just sit around in your, you know, basement and shred 8 hours a day on your guitar. At some point, you got to get out of the house. You got to get out in the mix and you got to be out doing it because that's where the people are, man. And this is entertainment, man. It isn't, you know, when, you know, ultimately, when you're on stage, people want to look and sound great because that's what people want. They want to be entertained by this. It's not this isn't a self-indulgent thing. Like I don't want to get a job and I hate my parents, so I think I'll play guitar. It has to go beyond that for sure, you know. So I don't know. You know, I don't want to get too philosophical about it because, you know, again, I think when you write a great song, if you get it out there, you know, people think it's a great song, period.
That's right. That's exactly right. All right, man. Well, we don't want to keep you too long because I imagine the chicken's probably been delivered, so you probably want to be tapping the barbecue.
To go do now. Yeah, exactly. Well, it was good talking to you guys. Thanks for the time, and hopefully the listeners are grooving and we'll get caught up again sometime here soon, I'm sure.
Absolutely. Well, we have one person who did ask. Her name is Kaylee, and she's actually an owner of an internet radio station in the UK, and she's going to try her best to come check you out when you're over there.
Cool. She should do that. Yes, Hail rocks, man. It is a great time. Great bunch of guys all playing great music for all the right reasons. So, yeah, she should come and check it out. And anybody else who may be listening over in the Scandinavia area, go to myspace.com/hailtheworld. You can also go to my MySpace, which is David Ellison 1, the number 1, that is, David Ellison 1, or davidellison.com. Those tour dates for Hail are posted on all those sites, so they can come and check it out.
Outstanding. Hey, before I let you go, can I get one? I want to get, because you're such an excellent, excellent dude, can I get a station bumper from you?
Sure.
That would be awesome. Just something like, you know, this is Dave Ellison from Trouble, and you're listening to Trouble Radio. That would be great.
Sure. Hey, everybody, this is David Ellison, and you are listening to Trouble Radio.
Awesome.
Thank you. So we're listening. Don't go smacking that chicken around too hard, you know, and then just, you know.
He's jealous.
I'm telling you.
I'm coming to your house. You're saying, right?
It's been a pleasure.
All right.
Dave, it's been wonderful. You take it easy. You too. Rock on, buddy.
Okay, bye.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
He's hilarious.
And there you have it, Trouble Radio listeners. The great Dave Ellison. From F5 Megadeth and Hail Rocks now.
Okay.
Going to be hanging out up in the Scandinavian countries. Maybe that's a trip for us to hit Sweden or something.
Yeah, we might have to do that one. Because he's a cool guy.
That's a very cool guy.